The Hard Shoulder with Kieran Cuddihy.
With the MG Hybrid and Electric range.
On News Talk.
Try and cheer people up as well with the bad weather that I've been reliably informed is prevalent outside the studio. The person who has informed me is Teresa Costello, who's a Fianna Fáil senator, is with me in studio. Teresa, you're welcome to the show. Thanks so much for coming in to us.
Thanks for having me.
With Teresa as well is Muireann McColgan and Ziva Cusson, and all here to talk about, well, Daffodil Day and by extension cancer services and treatments and everything in this country. And Teresa, you're coming at this, I guess, from a dual point of view, from a political point of view, a policymaker point of view, but also as a cancer survivor. Is that right?
Yeah, I was diagnosed with breast cancer 11 years ago. So I wasn't breast aware. So hence, after my diagnosis, I've been trying to educate women on their breast health. But look, I went from being a seven day a week gym member to with long blonde hair to being bald with no eyelashes. So, you know, life was put into perspective very quickly for me and unexpectedly.
And how long did your treatment last?
I started treatment August 2013 and I finished it around the end of June 2015. But then I was on hormone treatment for 10 years, which I'm actually still currently, I was only saying to the girls before we came in, I'm still taking my medication because I was taken off it and it feels like a security blanket for me and I just don't know how to navigate that change. So I'm going to get a second opinion and do some further investigation into what's best for me. Like, that's why I always tell everybody to advocate for themselves.
And beyond the physical impact and, you know, losing your hair and eyebrows and everything else that came with it, how much emotional toll does the whole experience take, or mental toll?
I wouldn't wish it on anybody. My son was five, he was six. I started my chemo on Friday the 13th of September. I always remember that because he was six on the 12th. And I looked at the child and I questioned, would I be there for his communion? So, you know, it was, and it was heartbreaking, the news. It has a ripple effect, like telling my mum and dad I had cancer. Like, it was horrible. I went for my appointments in the beginning, like, you know, for my first breast cancer appointment on my own, because I didn't want anybody to worry. Like, it was horrific. Like, but you do get through it, and the girls here with me today.
And that experience of going on your own, I mean, how much did you realise then over the period of treatment that, you know, that wasn't sustainable? You needed people around you to hold you up.
Well, for my initial appointment when I was being diagnosed, I went on my own. Prior to that, after that, then my cousin came with me and he came to my treatment, and I couldn't have done it on my own. Like, we laughed, we slagged each other, and, you know, but it was difficult. And you look around, I remember my appointment in breast care, I looked around the clinic and I was going, I hope that girl there doesn't have it. I hope that girl, look at her, she's young. You know, I was so on breast. I had no idea about breast health that I was looking around wishing that everybody else in the room didn't have it. I had three tumors.
Was it because you were young and you thought, I'll worry about this maybe in a few years, or what was it?
Well, no, you see, I found a lump in the shower and I went to my doctor and he'd said, look, you're young, you're fit, I'm going to err on the side of caution and send you on to breast care. And when I went to breast care that day, I had indentation. I had three tumours. Like, they knew by looking at me I had cancer. They said, you have cancer, we're going to send you for an ultrasound, a biopsy and a mammogram that day. And
wow.
They said, look, bring somebody with you because we're going to confirm you have cancer.
And listen, I want to come back to you about the level of service and where things might be improved and everything. But you mentioned the other two people as well with us in studio. And Muireann, Teresa talked about her 5-6 year old at the time when treatment started. And you had a new baby. Is
I
that
did.
Right?
I found my lump when I was 31 weeks pregnant and I went to my GP. I also had nipple discharge from one side, which is another sign. And I was told it was mastitis and sent on my way. I was told I was too young. I was told that we don't worry about lumps and bumps when we're pregnant. I was sent on my way. Luckily for me, I was with the midwives in Hollis Street at the time, and one of them kind of spotted it and urged me to get a second opinion. And I did. As it turned, long story short, 2 weeks after I gave birth, I was diagnosed. Unfortunately, it was stage 4 when they found it, which means it's incurable. So I'll be in treatment for the rest of my life. And it's effectively a terminal diagnosis. So, you know, I was dismissed and that's what happened. So,
and when you get a diagnosis like that, what treatment options are laid out?
So because I was de novo, meaning it was stage four by the time I was diagnosed, the treatment is actually kind of less severe because they're trying to prolong your life rather than cure you. So it's less severe. So I basically just take tablets every day. I get shots and I get follow-up scans and stuff. So I look relatively normal. I don't look like I have cancer, which is thanks to the new drugs. But, you know, I'd give anything to have that curative treatment, you know. Yeah. But it's not an option. So.
And in hindsight, is there a way that you might have been diagnosed any earlier? Were there earlier signs?
If my GP had have sent me for a mammogram on the day that I presented with the lump, I could have been diagnosed earlier. I could have been diagnosed at 32 weeks pregnant. Like when I went to the mammogram, the triple assessment clinic that day, they straight away told me I had cancer without even waiting for biopsy results. So it was fairly obvious to them. I just always thought, you know, the doctor's right. The doctor tells me it's nothing to worry about.
Yeah.
I go off happily. I never questioned that, you know, because it's how we're conditioned, really.
Yeah.
You know, so I feel like first of all, if I'd heard a story like mine when I was pregnant and found a lump, I would have known straight away. But I did book my appointment straight away. As soon as I found that lump, I booked an appointment with the GP that day and was told everything was fine. So, they asked me two questions. One was family history, which I don't have a family history, which only accounts for 10% of cancers, breast cancers anyway. And they asked, you know, because of my age, they basically said, you know, it's not cancer. So I don't think age should be a diagnostic factor.
Yeah. I mean, what's kind of worrying, not kind of worrying, what's really worrying about yours is you did the stuff you're meant to do.
I did this, yeah, so did Ziva. We did everything we were supposed to do and it was failings of the system that went against us, basically, because of our age.
Ziva, what happened? You're very young. How old are you now?
Yeah, I'm 23, yeah.
And tell us about your diagnosis then and how it happened.
Yeah, so I found a lump and I went to my GP pretty straight away. And then from there, they did refer me to the breast clinic just to be safe kind of thing. And they thought a fibroadenoma. And then I headed to the 5 weeks later, I got an appointment for the breast clinic. And there I was seen by somebody who did a physical examination of my breast and kind of asked me a few questions, kind of reassured me thinking, you know, saying they didn't think it was anything to be too worried about. And they thought also maybe a fibroadenoma. And
sorry, fibroadenoma is?
It's like a non-cancerous, benign kind of tumour.
Oh, right, okay. Yeah, tissue. Okay, yeah.
Yeah, so, and often in young women, you can get them. So I think they automatically kind of, when they see a young woman, kind of think that or a cyst or something else rather than cancer. And so then from there, I was told that I would get an ultrasound, never told like when, you know. And so I left kind of feeling good, like thinking, you know, I was okay and that I knew an ultrasound was going to come up soon. But I was left waiting 7.5 months for the ultrasound. And then by the time, actually it was before the ultrasound even came about, I was in a lot of pain. I started to experience pain in my like back and shoulder area and I couldn't understand what it was. And then all of a sudden the pain started in the lump and then I was like, right, something's not right here. And I had to phone up and kind of basically see if I can get in earlier, and I managed to get a cancellation appointment, and that's where I got my ultrasound there. And I kind of knew from that appointment, you know, the way they were acting, something wasn't right. And then 2 weeks later in and found out it was, you know, invasive ductal carcinoma. Originally they weren't sure what stage it was, but after further scans found that it was in my bones, and that made it stage four. Yeah, incurable cancer. Yeah.
So what does that mean in terms of treatment? Is it like Murren? Is it?
Yeah, it's like Murren. I was on, I've been on three different hormone treatments. That's the type of treatments they start you on if you're stage four and you're hormone positive. So I started on the same tablets that Murren was on. Unfortunately, it wasn't working for me, so I had to change to another treatment. And we found that that wasn't working either. The cancer was just very aggressive and the third one didn't work either. So then I tried an oral chemo tablet. That didn't work. And now I am due to start on intravenous chemo, a drug called Enhertu. So that's my next step, and just hoping that that's going to do some good, because everything else hasn't been great up till.
And how does it impact you then on a daily basis?
On a daily basis, I try to not let it affect me too much. Like, I'm currently obviously on crutches, you know, due to my legs just being really weak and the disease in the bones.
Yeah.
But I try to continue to, you know, see my friends, do as much as I can, travel when I can, you know. It might be different now when I start the intravenous chemo, but if it works, that would be amazing. So,
yeah.
But yeah, it has a massive effect on, you know, your life. Everything's changed for me now, you know. I had to stop working and yeah.
Karina Smith is after getting in touch, who is your third class teacher in primary school.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah. She was always such an impressive young girl, and I'm wishing her all the best.
Oh, that's so lovely.
Oh, that's so lovely.
Yeah, that's Thank a lovely so message much. To Aww. Get as well. Maureen, when you're dealing with everything that's coming at you, say with the diagnosis, when you find out that it's stage 4, mm-hmm. and this is just a question of kind of containing it and lasting as long as possible, and you've then have a newborn baby as well at home, so it's this like utter emotional tsunami. How much room is there for anger, or how frustrated are you, or does that come later, or when does that happen?
I would say it happened straight away.
All right, okay.
Yeah, no, it was really tough, I'm not going to lie. I mean, I think my baby was a distraction, actually. It was something to kind of take that away. But I mean, it was, you know, nice. You don't sleep with a baby anyway. But when people were asleep, I mean, there's that crippling, like dealing with your own mortality, especially when you have a newborn at a young time in your life when you're not set up. I mean, it was terrifying, absolutely terrifying. I think I've learned to kind of cope with it a little bit better. But, you know, it never leaves you. And it's always in the back of your head.
Do you cope with it by compartmentalizing it and not thinking about it, or do you cope with it by just accepting it?
I think I've coped with it by sharing it on Instagram, and by I've done some charity fundraising for Breast Cancer Ireland and stuff. I think that's really helped me to actually come out and say it, because when you have a new baby, I bump into people on the street and they're like, you must be so happy, and do you know, I had this thing inside me and I was like, oh yes, but you're kind of hiding it. And I think coming out and saying it online and sharing it with people and finding other people in the same situation and befriending them and sharing with them has really helped, you know, because nobody really understands it unless you've been through it. It's very hard to put into words.
And Ziva, I'm terrible at coping with concepts of my own mortality. I'm really bad at it. I've said it before this show, and I certainly, when I was your age, it didn't register with me. It was kind of something I just refused to countenance. You know, despite the reality staring us all in the face, it's the nature of life. I mean, how have you managed that part?
Yeah, I don't know. It's amazing when you get into these types of horrible situations how you realise how strong you are and how, you know, I'm really grateful that I do have a really good mental health and a mindset, and it's all about mindset and how you view the situation. And so, you know, I think I'm at peace, and I'm, you know, while I was angry and upset, and I'm at peace, and I'm at peace with what's, you know, I'm still positive, and I continue to be positive every day and hope for, you know, something good to come along, you know, for a miracle. We all do, but yeah, I think I try to see it in, I don't want it to eat me up, you know, if I don't want it to ruin, you know, my strength, that like I need to keep going.
Yeah.
So I don't dwell on it too much, if I'm being honest. And if I do, I kind of just, I'm at peace with it.
Yeah. And you can give as little or as much detail now in answering this question as you want, but do they give you a time frame when they diagnose you with stage 4 cancer like that?
Well, I'm sure if you ask, I didn't really ask, okay. You know, and they haven't said, oh, you only have, you know, 6 months left to live, or, you know, something like that. But I don't really want to ask that question, because I don't want anyone to put a time limit on me, you know. Who knows what's going to happen? You just got to keep going. And I think that wouldn't help me mentally if I was to be told, oh, you only have a year left, you know. But yeah, they don't tend to do that unless you ask.
Your old drama teacher Shelley is after getting in touch as well.
Stop it. Amazing.
She's an amazing girl, and she's a super actor, and would love to see her soon. So
thank you, Shelley.
Shelley after getting Maureen, did you ask that question?
I did, yeah. And I found they were very hesitant to say. A lot of them would just say, I don't have a crystal ball. Mm. I mean, I know it's very unpredictable. Like, they just cannot predict life expectancy, and there's nothing they can really tell you to help your body cope with it any better than, you know, it's just going, it just seems to be completely random, to be honest. I know with the new drugs, the statistics or the data isn't there, quite there yet to say. But I mean, that's it. We do scans every 6 months or every 3 months to tell us if the disease is stable or progressing, and you change treatments if it's progressing. And then, you know, there's a certain amount of treatments. And once that's run out, you're just told there's nothing more they can do for you. I mean, that could be tomorrow. It could be 10 years. You've no idea. And that's really kind of, you're constantly living on the edge.
Yes, you know, that's what I was thinking.
With anxiety.
Constantly living on the edge.
Yeah, anxiety inducing. But as Eva said, I mean, you cope because you have to.
Yeah.
Do you know?
I don't think it would be healthy to give anybody a time frame, but I think the way treatment is going now, it's letting people live with cancer rather than, you know, be told you've X amount of time to live. So the girls have explained that they do live scan to scan. And you spoke of your relief to me today that I
had a scan results yesterday, but they thought it was going to be bad. It ended up being good, so it was a huge relief.
Yeah.
So you can imagine the stress of living scan to scan
without
being told. Like, and who wouldn't give up if they were told you have 3 months? Who wouldn't throw in the towel?
Yeah.
The huge amount of people impressed by all of you. And one person actually here says they've got stage 4 soft tissue sarcoma. For the last 19 years, and like that, going from scan to scan. But that's been their experience. So they, again, kind of are at it and with you and not putting a time frame on anything.
Yeah.
Then in terms of improving services, Teresa, because, you know, anybody listening at home to this, they will be struck by how maybe there were shortcomings in Wern and Ziva's experience of those services and accessing them.
Yeah.
What do we need to work on?
Well, when young girls take our advice and present and are referred to breast care, we want them to be scanned quick. We don't want them sent home. Like, when they're on the day of that appointment, the minimum they should get is an ultrasound scan. Anybody who would disagree with me has never had a lump on their body. I think it's preposterous to think of anybody walking around with a lump and having to wait 7 months to know whether it's non-cancerous or it is cancerous. So firstly, that is a systematic need that needs to change. And that's what I'm calling for. And also for to have free breast cancer screening expanded from, it is currently 50 to 69, but I want it from 40 onwards. And that's currently being reviewed by HICWA.
Okay. It just strikes me, you know, there's people out there today are going to find a lump somewhere in the body and they'll actually ignore it. They won't do anything, you know, and there's this big job of work that's been going on for years and it continues not to do that. And the idea then that if somebody decides, no, I'm actually going to do something about this, that the system fails them. Yeah. I mean, it's just really unconscionable.
It's heartbreaking. And after my breast cancer journey, I set up a support page called Breast Friends, and I have 3,000 women in a private group. So as you can imagine, I'm communicating with women who some are like, I'm really busy in work at the moment. I found a lump. I'll go to the doctor next month. And I am going,
no.
Go now. Yeah. Don't delay. And you know what? When you're in the system, the service is quite good. Yeah. We're just highlighting something that the stats have changed. Like, there's 3,700 women being diagnosed with breast cancer. There's about 30% are under the age of 40. I think I could be corrected on that. But, you know, those stats have changed over the years. When I was 11 years ago diagnosed with breast cancer, I was 36. People were like, you're so young.
Yeah.
But over the years, through my work on Breast Friends, I've seen more and more girls in their 20s and 30s. And Ziva's not the only girl that I know of that was in breast care in her 20s and was left waiting 6 months for a scan. And, you know, it needs to change. And I'm going to be bringing a commencement matter to the Shannon next week. We've bumped into the Minister for Health in the corridor of Leinster House recently, and we've told her what we're focusing on. Previously with Minister Donnelly, I had frank conversations about breast cancer, and it's something that's really important to me because I've the lived experience of it.
Well, listen, the work that the HSE and all those health professionals do, it's supplemented all over the country by local cancer services. I'm an ambassador with Cushnoor, so I'll give them a shout out in Kilkenny, Cushnoor Cancer Services, and they do great work. But I know the Irish Cancer Society as well on a national level do great work. And so if you haven't been out and about today, it's Daffodil Day. Before you do, you're going to see somebody somewhere shaking a bucket, and don't be sorry afterwards you didn't have a few quid. Have a few quid maybe in advance and throw it in, because it is worth it. It is absolutely worth it, certainly listening to the stories today. So thanks everybody for coming in. Really mean it. Teresa Costello, Muireann McColgan and Ziva Cussin.
The Hard Shoulder with Kieran Cuddihy.
With the MG Hybrid and Electric range.
Weekdays from 4 on News Talk.